This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK5.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 95, Wrist Nipple. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Matthew Rushing. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including a feature-length Blu-ray release for Redemption, recovered footage from The Bonding, Star Trek fragrances, personalized Star Trek email addresses, George and JJ's Facebook chat, a little-known Into Darkness TV spot, and the Into Darkness soundtrack. Then in the feature, we're joined by Drew Stewart, Mariel Kieran, and Dave Rossi to discuss Unexpected. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Matthew. How are you doing this week?
You know, Chris, doing really well. It was a busy weekend. Went and saw Iron Man 3, had a great time. And then, of course, today had work, came home, watched the episode Unexpected, and then watched Mad Men because I missed it last night because I was hanging out with some friends. It was gorgeous outside, and we had a fire, and we made s'mores, and it's just...
Yeah, I saw your photos on Instagram of you sitting around the fire.
Yeah, so had a really good time. And yeah, just wish that there was enough time in the weekend to actually get some rest in. Because then as well today, I ran my first 5K as practice because I'm supposed to do one next Saturday. And I'm not so ready, so I can't feel from the waist down. My legs may or may not be there. I don't know. I'm kind of wheeling around in this office chair. I feel a little bit like Captain Pike right now.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, now I used to walk 5K every day for exercises, walking, but running 5K? Yeah, I don't think I could do that.
So it should be fun. I'm hoping to just be able to finish. I don't care about my time, so yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe you'll make it. All right, well, let's jump into Star Trek news here. We've got, I got my TNG Season 3 Blu-rays and my Best of Both World feature-length Blu-ray just the other day, and that leads us into the first story that we have here, which is news that Redemption will be coming out as a feature-length Blu-ray on July 30th, at the same time as the TNG Season 4 set.
Well, and I'm really excited about this. I mean, I haven't gotten the Best of Both Worlds set yet, but I hear that they have some specific documentaries just for that set. And so they're definitely making you go and buy extra versions of these episodes because they're putting extras on there that are worth having. And so they're going to do the same thing with this one. A new documentary will be on the disc about Survive and Succeed, an Empire at War. So that should be fantastic. And then some of the documentary features, you're going to have Ronald D. Moore, Michael Dorn, Robert O'Reilly, Gwyneth Walsh. And so some really good stuff. And if you've seen some of the documentaries from the Best of Both Worlds, especially where they had Shelby on, they had Elizabeth Dennehy talking, and it was fantastic to really hear her talk through what it's like to be a guest star and just kind of her life then, you know, being a very young star at the time. And it was really, really good. So these documentaries are fantastic, and they're well worth, you know, these aren't really that expensive either.
No, they're not.
So it's definitely worth picking up.
Yeah, you know, I love all of these special features and documentaries, and I keep buying these sets. It's just like the Blu-rays. I mean, of course, I love having the 1080p picture for the episodes on Blu-ray. I like seeing everything remastered. But I already have all the DVD sets, and one big reason why I do buy the Blu-rays anyway is for all the extras, because I just love this stuff. If they just put out discs of extras, I think I would just buy those. You know, I don't need the episodes anymore. Just give me some discs of extras.
Well, and I'm with you, Chris. I mean, I'm the kind of guy who will sit and watch 2.5 hours on the extended edition DVDs of the Lord of the Rings series, where they just go into so much detail. And those are probably the best extras I've ever seen on any single set, because it's so comprehensive.
Yeah, probably so.
When you finish watching it, you feel like you have, you know, been making the movie with the creators. And to me, that's what every extra should be like, so that I feel like I've made the movie with them. And so I really like these. I've been watching all the extras. I've just been getting the Blu-rays as well for TNG now. And all that's really well done. In fact, the writer's room that they did with Ronald D. Moore and all the rest of the guys from the writer's room in season 3 and beyond, they're all talking to Seth MacFarlane. And that is one of the best extras, just behind the scenes, what it was like to write for The Next Generation. So this is great stuff. If you have been trepidatious about getting the Blu-rays, I would highly recommend them, because not only are the extras fantastic, but the episodes themselves look amazing.
They definitely do. And this brings me to the question I wanted to ask you today, Matthew, is obviously there appears to be a trend here. The Best of Both Worlds was the first two-part cliffhanger in Star Trek history. They've done that as a Blu-ray. Redemption is the cliffhanger between seasons 4 and 5 of The Next Generation. They're doing that as a Blu-ray. And as we get into season 5, we start having these occasional two-parters in season on The Next Generation, in addition to the cliffhangers. And I don't know if they're planning to do all of the two-parters as feature-length Blu-rays or not, or are they only planning to do the season-ending cliffhangers this way? And, you know, some of the two-parters are better than others. I feel like the quality of the two-parters started to decline towards the end of the series. If we pick and choose, like, what do we think about these two-parters being on Blu-ray? In season 5, soon after Redemption, we get Unification 1 and 2. Now, I think you and I can agree that we would love to see Unification as a feature-length Blu-ray, hopefully with some sit-downs with Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, I think that would be just an amazing set. It would give so many different types of fans a reason to come out when they put that into the theater. I can't imagine any Star Trek fan not wanting to hear more from Leonard Nimoy, especially about his work on Unification and all that went into that. You'd be able to talk to Denise again as well. And so this would just be a great, I think, landmark event for the Next Generation Blu-ray series. I mean, Best of Both Worlds was huge. My theater was packed when I was there, but I think Unification, again, you would have a sold-out theater for each of the theater chains that decide to do this. And so, yeah, that's a great choice of episode. I can't think of, you know, one better, because I'm with you. I don't know if any of the two-parters, I mean, I'm not sure anyone want to sit through Chain of Command that uncomfortably with so many people around. I mean, that's a really tough episode to try and watch.
Yeah, so Chain of Command, right. So Unification, I think, is a no-brainer, both for a theatrical screening and for a Blu-ray. Chain of Command, I think that there is an audience for it as a feature-length Blu-ray with a lot of extra documentaries and, you know, interviews with Patrick Stewart and finding out what went on in the production of that, because it is a very powerful episode. I don't think it's something that I would rush out to the theater to sit through, I have to say there. Before we get to Chain of Command, in between Unification and Chain of Command, we have the season 5 cliffhanger, Time's Arrow. Do you have any interest in seeing Time's Arrow as a feature-length Blu-ray?
You know, I don't as much. That wasn't one of my favorites. If I was going to do, I think, a two-parter from The Next Generation, I'd really want to see Birthright, because I'd get to see Deep Space Nine in high def for the first time. And I think that that would be a great way to kind of promote, hopefully getting Deep Space Nine on Blu-ray at that point, when that would come out.
Okay, and that's an interesting point.
So I'd really like to see that, but that has some serious ulterior motives there.
Yeah. Again, I don't know if Birthright would play well in the theater, maybe as a feature-length Blu-ray, perhaps. I don't think it's as powerful as Redemption is going to be. Certainly not as the best of both worlds or as Unification would be. And Time Zero, you know, I mean, I like that episode okay. I know a lot of fans don't really care for Time Zero very much, but it's not... If they put it out as a feature-length Blu-ray, I'm sure that I will pick it up just to have a complete collection. But yeah, it's not high on my list. Okay, Chain of Command we talked about, Birthright we talked about. The end of Season 6, the cliffhanger is Descent. And I don't know. This is an episode that I've really never cared much for.
I'm with you. Descent is really not one of my favorites. And so I wouldn't really... I just don't feel like I'd get a ton out of seeing this, you know, on the theater or doing it as a two-part episode like they did, you know. And then you, too, run into the Gambit, which I also don't think I'd be all that interested in seeing like this.
Right.
I think we all know the last season, they're probably just going to do All Good Things.
I'm sure All Good Things will be a standalone Blu-ray.
Yeah. Mainly because, you know, even Moore and Braga talk about that that's still one of their favorite things that they've done for the series and, you know, just for Star Trek in general. They're much prouder of that than they are Generations. And so I think all the fans would love to see that wrapped up in the theater for Season 7.
Oh, definitely. If they don't show that in the theater, I would be absolutely shocked. And also, you know, as a Blu-ray release, they could even do a two-disc Blu-ray release for All Good Things, where the second disc is just a complete retrospective on The Next Generation itself. I know a lot of that stuff will be on the Season 7 Blu-ray set, but there is a lot of stuff to talk about in Season 7, and it would be quite cool if they did like a final disc that's just nothing but a retrospective, interviews with all the writers, all the actors, all the creatives behind the scenes, and just go all out to wrap up the remastered release of The Next Generation. I would really like to see that. So if you want to check this out, you can actually pre-order Redemption as well as Season 4 already from Amazon. I didn't pre-order yet because the prices are a little bit high still, especially on Season 4. And although they do give you the lowest price, they do it by giving you a refund on your credit card. And so I like for it to come out a little bit before I actually make that initial charge. But I will put links to that stuff in the show notes, as well as a link to TrekCore, where they have a first look at the artwork for Redemption. It has very nice cover art and some other information.
Yeah, I went ahead and ordered it, Chris. I just put it on pre-order because they were so good to me with Season 3, getting it at the lowest price. So I just trusted Amazon this time. I just put it in there. Just threw my money at
them.
They
will. No, they... They'll give you the lowest price. They absolutely will. You can trust that they'll do that. But I like to, because of shipping for me to Japan, I like to get the standalone Blu-ray, as with Best of Both Worlds, as well as the season set on the same order, so that I only pay shipping once. So I'm gonna hold off just a little bit longer myself. So Matthew, while we're talking about TNG, we're talking about Blu-rays. This next story is quite interesting. We know that they've been recovering lost footage from various episodes. Of course, the Season 2 set has the extended cut of The Measure of a Man. And we've talked recently on the Ready Room about footage from The Child and The Wounded. And now TrekCore has a new story about 6 minutes of additional footage that has been recovered from The Bonding.
And Chris, I watched all this today, and you know, some of the footage, it's not, you know, that big a deal. It doesn't change too much. There was a good extended scene with Beverly. I, of course, really liked that. She's telling Worf when he's in sick bay, you know, that he needs one to rest, and she puts him on inactive duty for 24 hours. So I just thought it was interesting scene actually, because just watching, you know, the doctor have the power over any officer, no matter who they are, when it comes to medical issues like that. So I thought that was really, it's actually a good scene, because, you know, Crusher's getting to do something doctorly. And then two, there's a great scene with Marina, and she's talking to Jeremy after this has happened, and it's a great counseling session. And we don't get to see Counselor Troy get to do a lot of counseling that doesn't involve just standing on the bridge and telling Picard what he already knows. And this scene was so good because she's actually counseling. I mean, she's doing what a counselor does, where she's trying to get information out of somebody. She shares a personal story that makes a connection with her patient. And, you know, she's even using her fact, she's even using the fact that she's a Beta Zed, but not in the way you'd think. And so it was just very clever and well-written scene, and I'm sad for her that it got pulled out, because if they had written more scenes like this for her in the series, I think more people would have felt like, oh gosh, you know, this person, this character has some validity for being on this ship.
Right, and it makes you wonder how many scenes like that might exist in other episodes where, because she was... I hate to call her a minor character, and that'll upset a lot of people, but, you know, it's Picard, it's Riker, it's Data, it's Worf. Troy was pretty far down the list in terms of who was going to get character development on the show. And then they, when they do give that development and then scenes get cut, like the one here in the bonding, you know, it does leave the viewer feeling that the character doesn't really play an integral part on the ship, when actually, you know, that stuff was written in, it was shot, it just didn't get into the episode.
So this is one of those things I'm going to be interested to see, you know, where they put this information, if it'll show up on in any of the Blu-rays at all. But this is good stuff. I'm so glad that these kind of things are coming out, you know, that fans are finding this, that they've had for the longest time, or they're just finding this information. Because like we were talking about just a few seconds ago with the extras we get on the Blu-rays, this background of information, this is really what gets fans excited again, you know, and it helps remind us too just why we like The Next Generation and why we liked, you know, with the Enterprise Blu-rays coming out, why we like Enterprise. And so I really appreciate people coming out of the woodwork with all the stuff that they're, you know, been holding on to for so many years and now getting to see it.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, this will not be like The Measure of a Man, where they actually have the extended cut on the discs, because the bonding is from season 3 and the season 3 Blu-rays are already out. But hopefully we're going to see at some point during the release of The Next Generation on Blu-ray, hopefully we're going to see some featurettes that, you know, show some of this footage that's being recovered from these videotapes that have been found. And, you know, what I was especially hoping here was that this was the 6 minutes after the bonding ceremony with the candle, so we could find out what actually happened with young Jeremy Astor. Because, you know, Worf, he does the ceremony, they're bonded, and Jeremy just disappears. We have no idea whatever happened to that boy.
That was one of those things where I would, you know, it would have been great to see just a little bit of follow up, you know, just a line of dialogue or something, to know what happened to Jeremy. And so, fortunately, you know, TNG, that wasn't really their preview things to do. But
yeah,
hopefully one day we'll stories. You know, find what happened to Jeremy Astor somewhere. Somebody will write a non-canon novel about that.
Maybe there'll be one of those interactive features on the Blu-rays, the Where's Jeremy game that you can play with your remote and you find Jeremy.
Where in the universe is Jeremy? Oh, goodness.
That would be good. Well, if you want to watch this stuff for yourself, TrekCore has the deleted scenes. They've also put together a written analysis of the 6 deleted scenes as well, and we'll put links to those in the show notes, and you can go check them out for yourself. Now, Matthew, you know, I'm married, but you're not. And I know sometimes you go out and, you know, you're hanging out with friends and you want to smell good and you want to show off your Trekkiness at the same time. And so there's great news for you. Is apparently Star Trek fragrances are back.
This Chris, is exciting. We've got some great new fragrances here for you. I mean, we've got Ponfar. Just in case you know that the mood is ripe and you're ready to go, you're going to want to be wearing Ponfar.
It's been 7 years
exactly.
since the last time.
It's 7 years, you know, and you just know that the juicy nectarine or the white violet, the tropical orchid, are really going to excite your lover. This is the way to go. you know, some of the names that they chose for these is odd. We have Red Shirt. Who wants to wear Red Shirt?
I don't think I would. I don't want to wear a cologne called Red Shirt. I'm afraid what might happen to me there. Sounds like you're just asking for trouble on that date.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have some, you know, just beautiful notes of apple and lemon and lime and rosemary with, you know, some cedar, musk and amber and leather, but all while I die? Like, is that just so I smell good? That last thing I smell isn't my charred flesh. It's, oh, he's wearing Red Shirt. That smells good.
Right. You know, I looked at the bottle, the box in the bottle, because I half expected it to say, Red Shirt, the smell of death.
Well, oh, wait. Maybe you wear Red Shirt because you think that you're less likely to be killed if you smell nice.
Oh, maybe. So you wear this while you're wearing your Red Shirt. Okay, I got you. Now, going back to Ponfar for just a moment, you know, at the beginning of the show, you mentioned that you spent the weekend sitting around a fire, and Ponfar is a perfume for women, and it says that it's perfect for those warm summer nights spent together around the fire. Now, were any of the ladies this weekend wearing Ponfar?
No, I don't. None of my friends really. I mean, there are a couple that are Star Trek fans, but I don't think any of them know, and because this show hasn't come out to tell them that, you know, Ponfar is available. But now they'll know, and I'm afraid that yes, that those sensuous scents will be smelled around other fires later on this summer.
Right. Your friends are maybe like you, more into Superman. They're wearing the kryptonite fragrance.
Well, that's just dangerous. I mean, I guess kryptonite for men, you know, is I don't know what that means. And a kryptonite for women, if you're both wearing kryptonite, but for your respective genders, does it cancel each other out?
No, it basically you just go down to the ground right there wherever you are.
Oh goodness! Well,
there's just no way you can.
Oh, my Lanta. Well, I just hope that that somebody is, you know, that if that happens, you're not in some sort of public arena because, wow, you just get arrested. I'm worried about the listeners.
That's why you don't want, like, if you're in Macy's or a department store like this and you come down the escalator and you've got the girls who spray the cologne on you as soon as you get to the bottom of the escalator, you don't want them to be spraying kryptonite, especially not if it's, you know, breezy in the store and it flies back on them as well.
Exactly. You know, in what's interesting here is that I'm not sure why they chose this name, but the next one is Tiberius. And I'm not sure if Tiberius is based off of the Mirror Universe Kirk or, you know, the Prime Universe Kirk. Because I'm thinking if it's the Mirror Universe Kirk, he's a lot more dangerous, you know, he's kind of the bad boy, you know, you know, I'm not sure where they're going for here, but apparently Tiberius is a classic, a casual and commanding fragrance. It's sprinkled with some freshness and sensuality, just like Kirk. So,
yeah, I guess this makes you the bad boy. This makes you the Mirror Kirk, I suppose, or maybe it makes you the Abramsverse Chris Pine Kirk, because, you know, Kirk in the Abramsverse, he's much more the ladies' man than Kirk actually was in the original series.
Especially at the beginning of Space Adventure 2009. And so that may be what they're thinking of.
I think so, maybe so. And then the last one here is Sulu.
This is probably, I just don't know what to say about this. I'm not sure why you would choose Sulu, as your fragrance name. Sulu to me doesn't scream fragrance. I mean, it screams, when I think of Sulu, I think of, you know, the Naked Now, where he's all sweaty and brandishing a rapier. And I don't know. I just don't, well, I don't feel like he was wearing a fragrance at that point. I feel like he just kind of smelled like a gym bag.
Well, that's why this new fragrance here, Sulu, it's the official fragrance of the International Fencing Association.
Oh, that would make sense. So it's only really smells that fencers are really going to enjoy. So this might not be this, you know, the fragrance for you, you know. Goodness, I could have thought of some better characters, I think, you know, to go with fragrance-wise. I was really disappointed that Worf was not one of the characters, because he has a nice mossy peatiness to him with slight hints of lilac, you know, that I think would have made right. for a really fantastic fragrance. So
That would have been nice. Of course, there's Troy, which has a nice chocolate undertone to it.
Yeah, I think Worf would have been a perfect choice for a fragrance, you know? So, Chris, did you think of anybody else that when we were thinking through fragrances and you were looking through the story, any other characters jump out at you? You thought, wow, that's a fragrance that I would love to be wearing.
Mainly, I was wondering what Morn wears on Deep Space Nine. I think a fragrance called Morn would be something I would really want, because, you know, clearly he's very good at attracting the ladies and striking up the conversation, and I want to know what his secret is, and I think it must have something to do with the fragrance that he wears.
You know, that, and he apparently is just so loquacious that the ladies are just drawn in by his poetry and just the way that he speaks. And on top of that, he's wearing this wonderful fragrance that Quark sold him. I think he actually might be wearing Worf, and the ladies just love it. I think it's that hint of lilac at the end.
It probably is. Yeah, that must be it. And, you know, the other one also from Deep Space Nine would be Symbiont, which it just smells like a Trill Symbiont.
Right, which doesn't it just smell like one of those pools? Which I right, don't yeah, want to exactly. wear that. I mean, unless I'm trying to attract another Symbiont, and then, yeah, but I don't think that's going to help me, really, really you know, well. When I go out with some friends to eat or something. I think they're going to want to move away.
Yeah, probably not the best choice. So these fragrances, they are all coming out from Palm Beach Beauté, as I call it, Beauté. And they, you know, some of these have been out in the past. I don't recall who was making them in the past, if it was Palm Beach or it was someone else. But they're being re-released, apparently. They cost $39.50 per bottle. And the size of the bottle varies. Red Shirt, Tiberius, and Sulu are all 3.4-ounce bottles. And Ponfar is a 3-ounce bottle, because I guess it's just a little bit too potent. They don't want to give you too much of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the stuff you don't want to use too much. It is very potent. You want to be careful that who you use it around, because unless you want to incite Ponfar in them towards you, you probably don't want to wear this. So ladies, beware.
So you can check these out on StarTrek.com, and you can order them there through the Star Trek store if you're interested. Well, Matthew, you know, we at Trek FM, we have our own Trek email addresses. We have Trek.fm email addresses, but not everyone has an email address with Trek-related terms in the name. But if you want one, thanks to CBS and StarTrek.com, you can finally get one.
This is really cool, Chris. You know, if I didn't already have like 3 email addresses from another place, I'd probably want to do this. I mean, it's a fun thing, you know, to have your name and say Starfleet.com next to it. I would love to have this. I mean, I'm not sure which kind of geek wouldn't want to have this, because, you know, how many of us have created email addresses that have something to do with Star Trek anyway? And so, I mean, my first email address was like ds9_1701_blah-blah-blah-blah. I mean, it's the longest email address ever, but it had all this great Star Trek stuff in it, and, you know, I thought I was the coolest person ever. I was also, you know, 17, so give me a break.
Right.
But, you know, this is really cool, and you know, you get some good service here. It does cost $15 a year, but you can renew it that annually. It can be used on any of your computers or smartphones or anything like that, and you get all the normal things you tend to think of with emails and email companies, and so this is really cool. I mean, I don't know what kind of geek wouldn't be really excited about having toboldlygo.com, you know, next to their name.
Right, yeah. And like you said, it comes with anti-spam and antivirus and unlimited email storage, which is nice. And if you want to give it as a gift, you can actually get a voucher and buy the account for a friend or a relative and give them the voucher, and then they can sign up and get their own email address that way. So those are your choices there. And but, you know, as much of a Star Trek fan as I am, Matthew, and as great as it would be to have a personalized Star Trek email address, what I'm really waiting for is my own personalized Bosom Buddies email address.
Chris, now, oh goodness. I mean, we could just... What if you created a company that allowed you to, you know, Bosom Buddies, ALF, you know, Home Improvement, I mean, just Friends, Seinfeld, so many great email companies we're starting right now. You know, fans of all of those, I think, would be really excited. Bosom Buddies, that's the place to start, though.
Oh, it really is. And, you know, while CBS is at it with Star Trek, here it is again. This is CBS television distribution with Bosom Buddies. And, you know, you have your choice of domains. You can get your name at kipwilson.com. You can have your name at henrydesmond.com. Or the very, very catchy, your name at thesusanbanthonyhotel.com. And I think those are going to go really quickly.
Hey, Chris, can you hold on one second? I'm signing up right now, and...
Oh, man, I better go. You gotta get mine.
Hold on. Okay. Got it. I am now matt.rushing@susanbanthonyhotel.com.
Well, now we know where to find you.
Yeah, anybody can email me there. I'm super excited. I'll be using this email now exclusively, so...
All right, but if you'd like to get your Star Trek email address, you can do that. You can go to startrekemail.com, and we'll also put a link in the show notes, and you can hop over and find out more about that on startrek.com as well. Okay, Matthew, one story here. This is loosely related to the movie. We're not going to put it in the movie news and rumors section, because this is J.J. Abrams and George Takei, and they're doing a Facebook chat, not really about Into Darkness, but about Star Trek in general. So you've got someone from the new Star Trek and someone from the old Star Trek.
Oh my, this is going to be fun. Now, Chris, can you tell me, why is it George Takei that's going to be doing the interview with JJ? Is it just because he was the only original series cast member that was available and he's just bored? Or is it because, you know, Shatner is still really upset for not being in the film? I mean, I'm not really sure, you know, of all of the original series cast members, we're going to pick George Takei. It's because of his voice, isn't it?
Well, you know, I was going to say that, yeah, he's who's available. But actually, you know, let me ask you a question, Matthew. Have you been to Facebook? Because I think that George Takei is probably seen as going to be entertaining. You know, if you had, especially, it would make sense to me if you had JJ and you had Leonard Nimoy, since they worked together on the Space Adventure 2009, and it would make sense. But of course, if it's Leonard Nimoy, it's going to be a very, very serious discussion about Star Trek, something that, you know, you and I, and probably most everyone listening to this show, would be very interested in. But I think George Takei, it will be much more entertaining. It'll be more lighthearted. The Facebook chat is being hosted by Andy Samberg, who, of course, is a comedian. Many people know him from SNL. It makes me think that at some point during the Facebook chat, probably laser cats are going to invade.
Cyborg gone haywire. Earth in trouble?
Sounds like a catastrophe.
You just blew my mind. I mean, first we had George Takei, then we had J.J. Abrams, and now we have laser cats?
Welcome to the Terror Dome.
This is going to be the best Facebook chat ever. Unfortunately, probably the problem with Facebook chats is that they're chats. They're not video chats. So
yeah.
I won't actually get to see the laser cats, but I'm disappointed.
But Andy will be typing meow and doo 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 during the interview so that you know that the cats are both upset and shooting lasers at you.
So much fun. I'm really excited about this chat now. I'm hoping that I'm gonna be around. Oh wait, it's May 10th. It's my brother-in-law's birthday, one of my best friends. I am going to miss this. This stinks.
You're saying that you would choose your brother-in-law's birthday over a chat with J.J. Abrams and George Takei?
You know, it...
What if George wears his outfit from The Naked Time?
I still have to be at my best friend's birthday party, you know. It's what we sacrifice for friendship. You know what I'm saying, Chris?
I get it.
I'll tape it.
Okay. Okay, that'll be great. Do like open the page on Facebook so that the chat will stream through, the text will stream through, and then set your computer to record the screen, and then when you come back, you can just read the questions as they go by.
There you go. That's a great idea. I do think that this will be a lot of fun, though. You know, and being moderated right. by Andy Samberg, I think you can expect nothing but a lot of laughs with him and George Takei and JJ. So,
I'm sure. And in all seriousness, here, back in the day, they used to do these types of chats on AOL, and you know, we have a lot of important information about Star Trek that came out of these chats and out of these discussions, and so you know. It'll be fun. I'm sure there'll be some great tidbits in here as well. And 20 years from now, we'll look back at the transcript from these Facebook chats, and it'll help fill in some of the gaps in Star Trek for us. And again, that's on May 10th, and it begins at 8:30 Eastern Time. So if you're interested in it, we'll put a link in the show notes to help you get more information. Matthew, let's take a break from news for a moment here and talk about our sponsor, Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is absolutely the best platform for creating a personal website, a blog, a portfolio, or an online store. I've been using Squarespace for 5 or 6 years now. I swear by this platform. And what I love about them is that they are constantly updating the platform with new features and new designs and even more support options. And they give you so many beautiful designs to start with, and it's incredibly easy for you to put together a website.
One of the neat things, Chris, of the way the website's designed as well is that it'll look great on any device. So you know how important it is to have your website, your blog, any of the things that you're doing online to look good, not only on somebody's computer where they might have a huge screen to be able to see the site, but also on an iPad or say an iPhone or an Android device. You really want that site to really pop when somebody sees it, even on their small iPhone screen. And so this is one of the things that I really like about Squarespace as well, because you have a fantastic site on any device.
Absolutely. That's what they call responsive design. And I was just showing that to my wife, actually, yesterday, because I'm working on a site that's based on Squarespace. And we were working on the site in the browser, and she was seeing what it looks like on my large display. And then I pulled out my iPad, and I pulled out my iPhone, and I opened it on all three of these devices at the same time. And she was amazed at how well the Squarespace system reflows the site, and especially how the menu system works on a smartphone, and how it breaks it down into a little menu link that you tap, and then you have access to the site's full menu, and it looks great. You know, it's none of that pinching and zooming stuff that you sometimes have to do on sites just to figure out, you know, how to navigate around. So that is fantastic. And the way that you build those sites is one of the true joys of using Squarespace. Using a system of blocks, you can actually assemble a page by just dragging different types of contents onto your page. And then Squarespace automatically locks those into a grid. And I use the word lock, but don't mistake that for being, you know, a rigid design and a very basic website. It just does the layout organization for you so that what you really think about is just the content and how you want to make your website look. There are fantastic controls behind the scenes that you have access to. You can modify the look and feel of your site, the widths, the typefaces, the sizes of your headers, and everything using sliders, just entering digits, sizes for the fonts. It's super easy. And it really takes all of the hard parts of building a website out of the picture and makes great web design accessible to really anyone.
Well, and I think this is one of the really nice things, Chris, is because Squarespace really cares about design. And all of the templates are extremely clean, and they really allow you to take that content that you've put on the site and have that be the focus and not necessarily the website itself. And for me, you know, I really don't like when I go to a website and it's just really cluttered. And Squarespace really understands this idea of design and how, you know, when you go to a certain type of website and it just pops out and everything is very easy to find, that's really what Squarespace helps you do. Take your content and make that the focus.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you care about design, if you want to make things easy on your readers, Squarespace is perfect starting point for that. And then, as I said, you can modify it and make it your own. You know, no two Squarespace sites look alike. And that's actually very true. And the other thing that they make really easy for you to do is to get that content out of your website to the world. You know, these days, it's really not enough to just put content on your website. It's great to have a website, but people aren't going to find it unless you let them know it's there. And so using Facebook, using Twitter, using Pinterest, Instagram, Google, there are so many ways these days to connect with everyone through social media. And Squarespace lets you connect your accounts with your site and automatically push your content out as you make a new post. You can take any page on your website and you can share it on your Facebook page. The connected accounts features of Squarespace are incredibly easy to use, and they make sure that all the time that you do put into creating content results in people coming to your site and reading your content, looking at your artwork, purchasing your products. It really makes your website the most effective tool, both for your personal branding or your business branding.
Well, and this is one of the nice things that they do as well, is that they give you this great calendar feature that enables you to have all of your events, and you can put those, especially if you have a small shop with live events and workshops. If you're a musician and you're on tour, you can share your schedule with others, with your fans. I think this is a really neat thing that Squarespace does and allows it to be something that's simple and easy to use and not overly complicated. And for me, I'm not a web savant, so there's nothing I hate worse than having to really spend hours trying to figure out these kind of things. And Squarespace makes it simple and easy for anybody to be able to figure out and to use in just a few moments.
Yeah, the calendar is a really nice new feature. They've added quite a few new features just over the past month, and the calendar one is excellent. Other features they've added are the ability to duplicate pages in an easier way. You can restore deleted collections. So if you put your images into galleries and you build collections, you know, Squarespace has a great revisions tracking system, and they make it easy for you to restore things even if you have deleted them. And that's a great safety net. You know, I really appreciate those kinds of features because I don't have to use them very often. But, you know, we all make mistakes. We all change our minds sometimes. And it's great to be able to roll back when you need to. You can also send forms to multiple locations using the built-in form builder in Squarespace. And there are two new templates as well. There's Adirondack and Momentum. One is great for a store. One is great for a photo-centric blog. And those are added to the many wonderful templates that they already have there in Squarespace. And best of all, it doesn't cost you very much. The pricing is amazing. It's just $8 a month for the standard package, $16 a month for the unlimited package, and $24 per month for the business package, which gives you the incredible commerce features that tie into Stripe that can allow you to set up an online store and start processing credit cards and handle customer orders and shipping very easily in just a matter of minutes. And they'll even give you a free domain registration when you sign up for the annual or semi-annual plans. And we would love for you to try this out for free. Squarespace has a great offer for Trek FM listeners. You can get 10% off your purchase on new accounts. And you can try it free for 14 days, and you have access to all the features of Squarespace. And there's no credit card required. Just go to squarespace.com/trek. You just give them a name, an email address. They'll create a trial site for you. You can use all the features. You can import your existing site from WordPress, Blogger, or other platforms. See what it's like. And after 14 days, when you decide to sign up, and I know you will, you just enter offer code TREK5, and that will get you 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And you know, choose the annual plan. Get that free domain registration. There's really no easier way to set up a website, a blog, a portfolio, an online store. It's all there for you at Squarespace. So give them a try. We know you'll love them. You'll be supporting our sponsor and helping us bring this programming to you every week.
It won't be easy. You think it's strange when I try to explain how I feel, that I still need your love after all that I've done. You won't believe me. All you will see is a guy you once knew, although he's dressed up to the nines and sixes and sevens with you. I had to let it happen. I had to change.
Okay, Matthew, let's jump into movie news and rumors, which is going to be one of the final movie news and rumors segments on the Ready Room for probably 3 or 4 years, you know, because the movie is about to land in theaters for everyone except us here in Japan. You know, Argentina, they tried to outdo us, but they failed. Their release date is August 22nd. Ours is August 23rd. We beat them by a day. Star Trek into August. Japan rules.
I feel so sorry for you guys. all 50 Star Trek fans in Japan are so upset because the entire world is going to be spoiling the film for them. You know, you can't avoid the internet in Japan. That's like trying to, you know, avoid water in Hawaii.
Right. Yeah. We're all very upset here. But speaking of it being spoiled now, as you were telling me in the other side of the room...
The other side of the room.
You've been trying to avoid finding out too much about this film, yet here you are doing news with me on the Ready Room, and as a result of the news segment, you've had to watch the TV spots that have come out so that we can talk about them.
I did, Chris. I had to watch them all. Luckily, there was not a ton of new footage. It's just kind of reworked footage. It's mostly the same things we've seen. But there are a couple of shots where, again, we get to see the Vengeance clearly be the ship that's crashing on Alcatraz. And it just really bothers me that JJ would so kind of blatantly show us that that ship crashes. And maybe he's doing that on purpose, because we'll all think, oh, well, then the Enterprise doesn't crash too. And the Enterprise crashes too.
Well, you know, it could be like in The Wrath of Khan, where it leaked long before the movie came out that Spock was going to die in the movie. And the way they handled that was by having the simulator scene at the beginning, and they're doing the Kobayashi Maru, and then it seems that Spock died, and then the audience is like, oh my god, Spock did die in this movie, and then he stands up, and then everyone forgets about it until the very end of the movie, and then you realize, oh my god, Spock is actually going to die.
And I think that would be something great to do. I mean, you know, who knows if this is Khan or who it is. I mean, it could definitely have those undertones to it. I think that's a great idea. I am just disappointed, though. I felt like there were too many little tidbits getting out through these trailers. And in fact, the fact that they show us Klingons, that you actually see a Klingon without his helmet on finally, and it, you know, it looks really good. I think it's fantastic, but I wish the surprise had come from the film and not from a trailer.
Right, it is, yeah. Yeah, and the stuff we're talking about here is just, it's the stuff they're showing on television. So I tweeted yesterday that I kind of find it interesting, anyway, or puzzling, that JJ went to such extraordinary lengths for secrecy during the production of this film. And starting, because this isn't just happening this week, this goes back weeks and weeks now into last month at least, or longer, they're just basically releasing a bulk of the film in tidbits here and there. And if you piece them all together, you kind of know, I mean, you don't know who Harrison is. The movie will still be interesting to you, but there are all sorts of things that you would think they would want to leave as surprises in the film that are just being thrown right out there in TV promotional spots.
It is good, though. You know, the film has been released in other places in the world, and you're getting some reviews kind of trickling in, and luckily so far the reviews have been mostly positive, so that's a good thing. I'm glad to hear that. You know, from watching all of these trailers, all of these spots, I think the movie does look very good. I think I mentioned at the beginning of the show that I'd gone to see Iron Man. And the trailers for that film made it look that it was going to be a very dark and kind of brooding movie. But honestly, it was funny, and there was so much going for it. And I think that Star Trek Into Darkness, you know, it says Into Darkness, and they keep talking about the dark is coming and all of these kind of things. But I get the feeling that we might get into this movie, and it's going to be a lot more fun than we thought it was, because they've prepared us for Into Darkness.
Right. It feels like a setup, right? Like they are positioning the movie as one thing, and it's probably something different when we get in there and see it. So,
right.
You know, the one trailer that we... Well, there have been three. There's spot one called Run, which is a 48-second trailer, which does have some quotes from Spock telling Harrison, you betrayed us, from Harrison telling someone, maybe Spock, maybe someone else, you were sent to be sacrificed, darkness is coming. And then the cards that say Earth will fall. And then there's spot number two called The Future, which is basically like a video game teaser. And it's supposed to look kind of like 3D, and they're like falling and falling, and it's zoom, 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 and then you're dying. And then there's spot three called The Dark. And has that interesting scene for me where it's something that looks like it could either be caskets or it could be cryogenic chambers. And I really don't know which it is. And I'm really interested to find out when I see the movie. And of course it shows Klingons, as you mentioned. Now there is a fourth new one that I don't know if you've seen this, Matthew, and I hate to spoil this for you, but you know, I really have to talk about it. You've seen these spots that are running in the UK. I don't know if they're running in the US, but it's Harrison and he's psychoanalyzing Kirk.
Oh yeah, I have seen some of
those. Spock and Uhura. Well, there's this new one about Keenzer. Have you seen this one?
No. What is it, Chris?
Mr. Keenzer, Scotty's sidekick. A diminutive genius who ensures Scotty's success on every mission. But look deeper and you will see an outsider who does not belong. A man of two worlds. This tears him apart. Too tall for his own people, yet too short for the Enterprise crew. What does he do? Does he embrace his tiny size and go places no human has gone before? Or does he explore growth hormones, knowing they could destroy him?
I will help him decide.
Man, that is going to be great, Chris. Oh, goodness. I knew that they were going to bump up Kingazer's role in this film.
Right, yeah.
But goodness, oh, man, his story sounds epic.
For those of you who thought that he wasn't going to be important in this film because he didn't get his own poster when 8 billion posters were released last week, now he's there. He's there, and Harrison is going to help him solve the problem of his height.
Well, and I think it's really just that they've been kind of hiding how big Keenzer's going to be in this film. And you know, we were just talking about all the things they've been spoiling for us in the film, but this one's huge. I'm so glad that I didn't know this. And I, you know, just can't wait to see Keenzer's story finally play out.
Right. And now you're sad that you know it, right? Because I spoiled the Keenzer angle for you. Sorry.
Yeah, you did. But oh, well.
All right. Well, last item that we have today in news, Matthew, you and I both are big fans of film soundtracks. And, you know, Star Trek 2009 had a fantastic score by Michael Giacchino. And I was very happy to find out that Giacchino was going to be scoring Into Darkness again. I assumed he would, but, you know, you never know how schedules go and what people have lined up with other films because he scores a lot of stuff these days. But he did score Into Darkness about a month ago. We had those videos of the behind the scenes where they were recording the soundtrack. And now on May 28th, we're going to actually get this.
I'm excited, Chris. I do wish you remember the last time, you know, you got the soundtrack album and it came out. And then about a year later, they released a deluxe version that had a lot more of the score. I wish they would just do that up front because that's the score that I always want to wait for, but I want to hear the music, and so I always end up buying two of them, and then I feel like an idiot because they've got me, but I want to hear it because I really like Giacchino's music.
Right. Yeah, it's called marketing, Matthew, and that's why they do that. But especially recently where, because it's not just with these scores, it's like, you know, regular artists, they do this all the time where they will have Lana Del Rey is one. I love Lana Del Rey and I bought Born to Die. And then not too long after Born to Die came out, then she released Born to Die Paradise Edition, which had a lot of tracks that weren't on the original release. Luckily, she put it out as Paradise where you could just buy only those tracks. And people who hadn't bought any of it yet could buy the Paradise Edition. And so they do that with, you know, scores like this as well. It's just business. But it would be nice, like you say, if they would put both of them out at the same time. And like, if you want the standard one, you can buy that. If you want the deluxe edition, you can buy that. The way they do with Blu-rays when they have the single disc, the two disc, or the three disc sets.
Right. Well, and they're going to be doing that with the Man of Steel album. You can already get... pre-order the regular Man of Steel or the deluxe version. And so I do wish that they do that because, and they did that with The Hobbit as well.
I'm going on an adventure!
Which I was really excited about because I always just buy the one with more music because I love soundtracks and I really enjoyed the work for 2009. I thought it was fantastic. Some great themes. I'm excited to hear him continue those themes. And I'm just really disappointed because I always like getting the soundtrack before the movie comes out. And I spend like 2 days solid, 3 days solid, just listening to that. And then I can hear it better in the film and it really brings it alive.
Yeah.
But this won't be coming out till the 28th, which is after the film is released here in the States. So I'm very disappointed that I won't get that opportunity. By then, I'll probably have already seen the movie 12 times. So, you know, I'll be very familiar with the music. But yeah, this looks great. There's some great titles here too, Chris, for cues.
Yeah, so let me see. Now, if I'm not great at math, but if I'm just thinking, hey, you guys are getting this on the 28th. The movie official release date is the 17th, right? So for me, that means, I wonder if they're going to release the soundtrack in Japan on September 1st.
That would, yeah, wow. They would really be holding you guys back.
They really would. They don't want to spoil it for us, you know, by giving us the music ahead of time. So,
Chris, did you see here, though, on the soundtrack, apparently Harrison is a fan of The Clash, which I'm really excited to see that they're going to be on the soundtrack here, London Calling. I don't know who, you know, the original singer of the San Fran Hustle is, but that band is on here as well, so some good stuff.
Maybe, you know, I mean, having The Clash on here, it makes sense. You know, we had Steppenwolf on First Contact, and, you know, San Fran Hustle, it sounds like a piece by the Yellow Jackets, and maybe they're bringing the Yellow Jackets back. You know, they were in the Voyage Home soundtrack. It'd be a great way to just pay homage to the original.
What's weird is that I didn't think that J.J. Abrams would go all Baz Luhrmann on us and do, like, pop music in a Star Trek movie, because the last time that they tried to do pop music with Star Trek, it did not go over so well with fans. So, but at least we know they're going with some classics like London Calling.
Well, yeah, a lot to look forward to on this. So 14 tracks on this release, and we'll just have to wait to find out if there's a deluxe edition coming at some point in the future.
Having my baby, what a lovely way of saying how much you love me. Having my baby, what a lovely way of saying what you're thinking of me. I can see it, your face is glowing. I can see it in your eyes, I'm happy and knowing that you're having my baby. You're the woman I love and I love what it's doing.
As a prequel series, one of the promises of Enterprise was return to exploring the unknown. And in the early episodes, we saw that. Especially what happens when you stick your hands into a box of pebbles with an alien. And what happens is you get pregnant. And that's what happened to Trip in the episode Unexpected. And we're going to talk about that episode today. And to help us do that, we have with us, we have a large panel today. We have our news editor, Mariel Kieran. Hey, Mariel.
Hello. Hi.
And we have our TOS editor, Drew Stewart.
Hi, guys.
And also, we have a very special guest. We have with us Dave Rossi, who is an associate producer on Enterprise. Hello, Dave.
Hello, everybody.
Great. Welcome back to the Ready Room. So,
thank you.
Unexpected. This is a very fun episode, early episode of Enterprise. And Dave, I'm going to ask you to kick us off because you actually were there and you worked on this show. Tell us about how Unexpected came to be.
Well, the first thing is, this was, right up at the front of the run, I believe, and, you know, the entire idea behind this show was to fill in, I mean the series as a whole, was to fill in the gaps that we hadn't known, the prequel series, what happened, what led to Kirk, what led to the formation of the Federation and Starfleet the way we know it today. And so one of the things that that we did want to do is get back to that idea of exploration and what happens when you stick your nose in places it doesn't belong. I know, you know, early on, Rick used to call me Dr. Death because my ideas for this was always, we need to kill somebody. Somebody's got to die. Space is dangerous. It's scary. This is the first time we're going out there, so this should be, you know, we should exemplify that. But as the you know, as the series went on, we obviously took a lot of different roads. You know, the second season brought the bugs, and you know, so on and so forth. But this episode was, as I said, one of our first ones, and it was really to get a taste of how kind of wondrous and scary things could be out in space for the crew. And Connor Turnier is, I mean, he's so much fun to watch, and he's such a good actor that when we, I remember reading the script and just thinking, oh my God, this script is going to be a blast. And, you know, and everybody was very up on it, very, you know, everyone was very excited because it was the beginning of this whole journey. And so, you know, the script turned out really well. The story turned out really well. And ultimately, I think it is, in a lot of ways, one of the fan favorites.
Yeah, Connor was fantastic in this episode.
Yeah. Oh, he's so good. All the way through the series. I mean, he's just such a good actor. He's so likable. And, I mean, Scott Bakula the same way. These are guys who, you know, they kind of give off that test pilot kind of feeling, you know. They're not these polished Starfleet guys like we're used to from the other series, and certainly that was obviously mm-hmm. the goal with Enterprise.
So, Drew, you are a TOS editor, and you've been making your way through Enterprise. What was your impression of these early episodes in Unexpected and all compared to, you know, that exploration in the original series?
I like the exploration. I like running into weird aliens. This episode rubbed me the wrong way a few times. You know, we've got primitive aliens who need our help, who's have cloaking devices and holodecks. And of course, you know, when we find them again, they're trailing behind Klingons. So we've gone from, let's go out where we've never been before and immediately run into aliens that we've seen before. And I also didn't like, it seems like the third episode of every Star Trek series is like the naked time. There's the naked time and the naked now, where someone gets drunk or hormonal. And
that's a good point.
The thing that I'm noticing is that we don't know the TOS characters well enough for that to really be powerful, and we really don't know the Next Generation characters during Naked Now. That when they act weird, we don't really know because we don't know them. So it's weird seeing Trip, who we being this is only the second episode after the pilot, we barely know him, and here he is acting out of character. I mean, it's obvious that he's acting out of character because he's acting.
Because he's an actor.
Womanly? Oh.
Yes.
No. Oh.
He's playing a woman who is in the early yeah. stages of pregnancy, yeah.
And it's just, I think that episodes like this should come later in the series once we know all the characters. Like the Deep Space Nine's equivalent would be the one where they all get the love bug from
Luxana. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would argue this point with you, Drew. If you look at the naked time, actually, if you look at the run of the original series, you know next to nothing about any of those characters.
True.
I mean, Spock is the only one. I mean, what do we know about Kirk? He has a brother. He was a stack of books with legs at the Academy. We don't really know, and McCoy, Scotty, we know nothing about these people, and it really comes out in the performance. I mean, Leonard Nimoy's performance is certainly, in Naked Time, certainly gives you what Spock's problem is in that episode. But I think that episodes like this give these characters a chance to breathe a little early on so that you can kind of get glimpses into what they're like. But I mean, I see your point. I see your point. You'd like them to be a little more fleshed out before they dive into an episode like this.
Yeah, I'd like to see them more in character before I see them acting out of character.
Right.
But that's something I had to think about. That's not something that something about the episode just was kind of weird for me. I enjoyed it overall. It's a riot. But I was just trying to find some play maybe devil's advocate looking at the group that I'm surrounded by.
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I mean, I look, you work on these shows for, you know, I started in the fifth season of Next Generation. And as you go through these shows, I mean, there are shows you like and there are shows you don't like. There are creative choices that are made that maybe you wouldn't have made, and there are some that you do. And, you know, like I what I disliked about this episode was finding the holodeck so soon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, holographic technology. It was like, you know, that's, it felt like, boy, we've just finished, you know, 300-something, 400 episodes of people with holodecks, and now here we are finding the holodeck again. So it that always felt to me like, wow, why are we falling back on that so soon? But the episode was so much fun, it kind of didn't matter.
I think what this episode does was kind of what Dave brought up, is it gave you an opportunity to quickly get to know who Trip is by giving you, you know, you can already tell that he's somebody who's really eager to be out in space and to experience it all. And then he gets hit with that space is not what we expect. You know, he gets hit with the unexpected, not just, you know, being pregnant, but I mean, the fact that, you know, you're going to go onto this alien ship and it's completely different. You have to spend 3 hours in this decon chamber waiting for you to get normalized. Then you have to take a nap just so your body can recover. You know, I mean, so all of those things, I thought this episode gets everything right about what Enterprise should have been doing, I think. Because you're giving us an alien culture that's really different, really weird. I mean, the more out there it is, probably the better. Their technology looks freaky weird. And you're giving us an opportunity to get to know a character by having him do a lot of things. And, you know, the funniest part is, you know, that he does what we all expect him to do when he does get pregnant. He starts exhibiting all these, you know, behaviors, which is he's a little more emotional. He's worried about guardrails for kids. He's
I love that scene.
Really hungry, you know? I mean, he's eating all the time.
His crewmate is like, why would you put your hands there? And I'm thinking, and of course, Dave can back me up on this as a parent, and Dave's children are younger than mine, that is exactly what you're thinking as a parent. You see everything differently, and you can always see exactly how your children are going to hurt themselves doing something.
Yeah, you see everything is potential pain, right?
Yeah, you would never expect anyone to do. I love that scene.
Well, and, you know, I think too, and I'll say it again, Trip is magical, and this episode is magical because of it. And you know, Dave nailed it again earlier, was that Connor is just a great performer.
Really,
and
is.
You believe everything that he's doing in this. And that's why I can also believe that Trip can pull this off in the first place. I mean, you have to be a savant of an engineer to be the first Warp 5 engineer. They're not going to just choose anybody. They're going to choose the very best they've got. And that has to be Trip. And, you know, he spends 3 hours in that decon chamber learning about their technology from T'Pol. He spends a day there. And by that point, he's kind of got it. You know, I mean, warp technology can't be that different from each species.
So, Mariel, while we're giving our, you know, kind of first impressions of, because this is the, I think, fourth produced episode of Enterprise, so it is right out of the gate. And you grew up like me, like Dave, with TOS. What were your impressions?
I actually noticed the music of the episode really struck me as TOS. And of course, like everybody said, the ship being very alien. I think it was interesting that Trip could go in there and work on an alien ship. I thought that kind of spoke to, yeah, they're very alien, but in the end we're, you know, all in space with generally the same kinds of machinery. I thought that was an interesting...
And the same type of botany, or a biological, apparently.
Right.
And that we can procreate.
Well, that...
They're not really the same way. I mean, he just sticks his hand in some pebbles. I mean, geez, he doesn't even get to do the deed.
Well...
Trip.
Well, he did for their culture. But...
Right. Yeah, she would have been very embarrassed if someone had walked in on them. Let's just put it that way.
It takes four hands to work. That's my new pickup line.
Well, while we're talking about this Pebbles, though, what I thought of when I was watching it was she says, your favorite food is catfish. And he's like, how do you know that? And I was thinking, you know, if Troy had a box of these Pebbles on the bridge of the Enterprise D, I think she could have done her job so much more effectively.
Hold on. Before you negotiate, please come over here and stick your hands in this box.
And then she would
it's
just say something
olive
like,
and you're soaking in it.
Captain, I sense that he's angry and he's hiding something from you. Well, thanks, Troy. We all realize that already.
So then the captain's like, sir, could you come over here and stick your hands in this box for just a minute?
And Troy's like, I'm sorry I got you pregnant.
It was usually after the ship shook from a couple shots that she said, I'm sensing anger.
Right. So speaking of the environment and such. Now, I know that it turns out that that was grass that was growing on the floor on the bridge, which is kind of cool, actually. I mean, I was out walking yesterday, and I actually posted a photo of the trails behind my house, and I said, if I could just move my desk out here, this would be ideal. And I was thinking these aliens, they've kind of captured that, you know, they've brought the outdoors into their ship environment by growing grass on the bridge. But when you first walk in and Trip is very disoriented, it looks like carpet. And I thought, well, wall-to-wall carpet on a starship. That's pretty cool.
Did you somehow read my notes that I didn't post anywhere? Because that's exactly what I said. I'm just like, why do they have 70s green shag carpet exactly. in their ship? I mean, I guess that's alien.
It was a lot creepier in person. When we did the set walk, it was creepy.
Was it?
To see this mossy, weird material growing out of the walls. It was pretty creepy.
Yeah, what did it actually look like? Because I have the Blu-rays now, but even on the Blu-rays, you know, you can't tell for sure what it would have looked like in person.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what I seem to think that they went to like a train hobby store and you know, bought that material they use for fake trees and things like that. That kind of mossy, moist material. And it was just that stuff and mixed in different colors. And it was, it's so funny how something like that can be disconcerting to me knowing that it's a show. And if you think about what's going to happen when we are out there and you do walk onto a ship that's like that, I mean, it must be quite overwhelming. And I think they kind of played that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's really the first time I can't remember the last time where you really had an alien that just felt alien
really
from the moment
alien.
You kind of walk onto their ship and everything. I mean, you know, you go to a Romulan ship, it looks just like a human ship. I mean, some things are a little bit different, but it's just not weird. It's just a different aesthetic, you know, but it's very human.
It's so hard to do that. Well, not anymore because of CG, but it was so hard to do that kind of stuff because the production cost. I mean, you're obviously playing to a budget every show. So it was always very difficult to make super, I mean, everyone's bipedal. Everyone is, you know, there's a joke that it was the forehead of the week. I mean, so everyone looks like a person. And so therefore the ships, it was easy to design for those ships because we use those ships. But I mean, today you could do a show today that you could really do some freaky stuff that would be really fun.
Yeah, it was like you were saying, Matthew, one of the only times I can remember where you truly felt like, of course, you know, we all joke about how all the races are humanoids, and they even tried to explain it on TNG with the Chase, where they had the story about how this first race seeded the primordial oceans of all the different worlds. But in reality, of course, aliens are going to be quite alien. And even in this situation, it doesn't really go far enough to demonstrate what it probably would really be like if we did encounter someone. But it is by far the biggest attempt that I can remember to really illustrate how you can imagine that if Trip hadn't gone through that whole they try to choke him so he can come on the ship, and then he acclimates, and then he plays the game of Simon, and then he comes through, and he's still so extremely disoriented. You can kind of imagine what it would have been like if he had just walked right through the airlock and walked in there.
Oh, gosh, it would have been terrible. And I think that's, but I think that was something interesting, too. You know, Dave, you said the thing you don't like about the episode is the holodeck technology. But something I think Drew was saying on the other side of the room...
The other side of the room.
...was that, you know, each species kind of grows its technology in different ways. And so it just seemed like to me, okay, these aliens, they're not great, apparently, at warp technology. I mean, they're out there, but their warp engines apparently suck. But, you know, they also are apparently really good at things like, you know, creating different types of food and being able to materialize those because they have this, you know, replicator type of technology, apparently. They also have a holodeck type technology. So they figured all this stuff out before we do. And that was just something I found really interesting because that, again, made these aliens seem alien. I mean, they're not great at one thing, which we're okay at, but they're better at this other area because they've just grown that type of technology before we have. And I thought that was really interesting.
I appreciated their holodeck technology and how it, the walls were the hologram stickers that we had when I was growing up.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, like, you can see this, the step, how it went from the hologram stickers to holograms. I appreciate. I hope that that was a very conscious effort on the production designer's part.
I don't know. My fear was at that time that we were then going to incorporate it. You know, once these people taught us how to do it, we were going to have one, and it was like, oh, please, let's not go back to that. Let's, you know, flashing forward to Captain Kirk's time was always kind of the touchstone of this. You know, what can we do back here that won't screw with what we did up there? And, I mean, it was really fun in the development of the show I was in kind of a unique position in that when Rick and Brandon were working on it, because I was, you know, I think probably the only original series Star Trek person that wasn't afraid to walk in that room and give my 2 cents. And so, you know, Rick and Brandon would invite me in and we'd just talk there, not necessarily about the development of the show, but just, boy, what do you think made the original series click so well? And as we lead up to it, what are the things we should, you know, look out for? What are the problems we're going to have? And so there was just these big kind of blue sky open discussions, but the initial concept for the show was, these guys are out there. They are out there on the frontier, and it's going to be different and alien and scary and awe-inspiring, and so let's do as much of that as we can. And so when this episode was like episode 2 and it was a holodeck, I was like, oh, no, come on, let's not do this yet. Unfortunately, we didn't adopt the technology, so I was thankful for that.
I didn't mind. In fact, I thought it was interesting to see it, because if they had given holodeck technology to the NX-01, I would have been really unhappy with that, because,
sure,
the first introduction of holodeck type technology was in the animated series, and that would put it between TOS and TNG, but we really didn't see it until TNG. If they went back and they put it in Enterprise, everyone would be calling foul. But the fact that they showed that this kind of technology exists, it's out there, and these aliens have it, I didn't mind that. I thought it was kind of interesting to say, oh, wow, look, there's that holodeck technology, and it amazes our crew. They can't believe that it's even possible to do something like that.
I'm glad it came off that way. That's great.
Well, and I think what it does really well is it just gives the crew the opportunity to talk about what Riker is going to use the holodeck for, which is, we don't want to know what he's using the holodeck for. I loved that.
I just want to call out that can we call this in continuity the first holodeck accident?
It is a bit of an accident, yeah, isn't it?
In more ways than one.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to knock you up with my hands.
You know, speaking of her hands, I love the fact that she has a built-in razor. I thought that would be really, really handy to have. Whenever you need to shave, you just, you know, rub your fingers across your face, sparks come out.
It's horrible at night, though, when you have an itch.
Yes. Although,
I'm
going to say, that's got to be the best shave of your life. If, you know, you just have a hot woman just rubbing, you know, your face like that. I can't imagine a better shave.
Okay.
Come on, Drew, you were thinking it.
Nope. Because if she had the power, she'd obviously be that lizard person, and that's kind of weird.
But he said she had a certain sensuality to her. You didn't see
it,
exactly. Drew?
Yeah, exactly. Drew's maybe. Speciest.
Maybe, a little. Shut up.
Oh, gosh.
You know, when you watch this in retrospect after you've seen the whole series, you get the feeling here that T'Pol has a bit of jealousy about Tripp spending time with this alien, where I actually think it's written anyway, probably just as Vulcan arrogance and indignation towards humans, but it does feel like a little bit of jealousy on her part.
I have to say that I did not like T'Pol in like the pilot or up to that point, but her ribbing Tripp for getting pregnant on his first mission saved her. I was just like, I like this girl. You know, her whole thing about 3 days. You were over there for 3 days.
Well, it's interesting. What didn't you like about her to begin with?
I don't know if it was Jelaine Blalock's acting or something. She just seemed overly cold. Like I think there's a difference between not having emotions and being emotionless. That was something I was always afraid of after watching the pilot. I was like, I don't know if she gets the line between not letting yourself be emotional and not having emotions. But she eventually found it, and where I am now, she's really, the character is really grown.
It is a very tricky line. I mean, when you look at the Vulcans from Enterprise, it's easy to see them annoyed a lot of the time at us, mm-hmm. at having to deal with us. And, you know, we're so used to Leonard Nimoy's portrayal of his Vulcan performance. But when you cut to these other Vulcans, it's interesting to see how they play it because they do come off as kind of dickish.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I, even as the series was going, I kind of wrestled with that a lot too. It was like, well, wait a minute, are they subduing their emotion right now? Are they emotion? Did we go too far? I wonder what your take on it is. How your take on the Vulcans through Enterprise, because they obviously had a big role.
Well, I personally, I know a lot of fans are really upset about how the Vulcans are portrayed in Enterprise, and I personally like it. I agree with you; they come off as dickish a lot, and T'Pol comes off as arrogant. But at the same time, what I don't like in Star Trek, sometimes in science fiction, is if you see a race and you're dealing with cultures over the course of centuries and they never change. And it's one of the problems I have with the Klingons in Enterprise is that the Klingons in Enterprise are the same Klingons that we see in every series. There is no change or growth. Their ships look a little bit older. Their, you know, chamber...
Except in this episode.
Looks little, except in this episode where they bring out the Katinga class battle cruiser, yes. But the Vulcans actually seem more realistic here. This is where you can see, especially if you think about Vulcan history and what had led up to this point in time in their culture and how they change over the course of 200 or 300 years in the series to what we see when we get to Spock and then when we get to later Vulcans like Tuvok. I think it works. I think that I would expect the Vulcans to be different at this point in time. And
And I'm sorry, let me interrupt you real quick. What, when you say you know that there's a lot of Enterprise fans that are upset by the portrayal of the Vulcans, in what way?
They
in that they're too angry, or they're carrying a lot of emotional subtext.
I think
is that what you mean?
I think it's that. Yeah, that they're maybe too emotional, or that they're too controlling or deceptive. Like they don't seem like they're operating off of logic in the way that Spock and later Vulcans do. It's like they're trying to undermine, or they're trying to hold down humanity in some way. And I think it's that, and it's kind of the attitude that they portray. I think
right.
People expect it to be more of that Spock, or especially I think a lot of people expect the Vulcans to be more like Tuvok, because so many people these days grew up as Voyager fans because of the age group now. And they and you know, Tim Russ played like the flattest possible Vulcan portrayal in terms of
right.
Like it's I have no emotions, it's just pure logic, and Harry Kim, do your damn job. That's like his right. attitude. And
well, and that's what made, I think, T'Pol, for me, a breath of fresh air. And especially by the time you get to this episode, it doesn't take very long, but she starts to have just a little bit of that Spockishness to her, where she is ribbing Trip in this episode on purpose, because she knows it's going to get under his skin, and she likes that. And I appreciate that about her. I mean, I felt bad for Trip because he didn't do anything. I mean, he was a perfect gentleman the whole time. You know, he was a great representative of Starfleet and humankind to them. And she just keeps digging into him, and there's nothing he can do to say that she's going to believe, because as Drew so aptly put, she just says, 3 days. And the other side of the room of that conversation was, 3 days. 3 days, and you couldn't keep it in your pants? Seriously, Trip? That was the other side of the room that we didn't get to see in that conversation. And I do feel bad for him, because she's laying into him hard. And
well, I think you stumbled onto an interesting supposition, which is in encountering humanity, you might think that the Vulcans get a glimpse at their older selves, and they realize we need to hunker down a little more. we're gonna go back to being these guys. The evolution of Vulcans from Enterprise up through, we're reversing time here, but from Captain Archer's time through to Spock's time, and then Voyager. It seems like they hunkered down a lot more. They really buried their emotions after that. So that's kind of an interesting. That's an interesting take on it.
Maybe they're trying to set a better example for humanity.
That's true. God knows we could use it.
Well, and especially with the trouble they caused later on in the series, you know, you can really tell that they have gone away from Surok's teachings, and really are not who they even wanted to be in the first place. And so the Vulcans that we deal with for 100 years, poor Henry Archer and his son, are not really who even the Vulcans wanted to be. They just become this because they've lost their way. And that's fantastic. Yeah.
Weirdness going on with them.
And I think that makes for a realistic portrayal. So I like the way the Vulcans are handled. An Enterprise. I think Star Trek would be boring if it were always the same. I mean,
that's why we went back to this prequel era, is so that we could get more history. I mean, if we wanted, I mean, here, I was going to list down a bunch of things. If we wanted Klingons and Ferengi and Borg, and oh wait, they're all in Enterprise.
Well, the Borg.
Right. Nausicaans, right.
If we wanted all that stuff the way that they always were, we could have kept Voyager going for another, you know, back home, and now they're just wandering around the Alpha Quadrant. Right.
The Borg inclusion didn't bother me. That one, I can see.
Yeah.
That made sense.
That one's really cool.
The Ferengi one was a mistake, and even Rick Berman and Brian Braga will say that was just a mistake. The Ferengi shouldn't have been.
Yeah, that was painful. I remember having a chat with Rick and Brandon and just saying, Do we really want to, you know, we establish a next generation that, you know, this is a kind of a recent species for humanity to have uncovered. Do we really want to go here? And, you know, they had a story in mind and they ran with it. So, you know, they followed what they felt they wanted to do and they were the bosses. So that was, it's not a right or wrong choice. It's their choice.
I mean, I liked the episode. I liked the all-star cast of Ferengi. That was really cool.
Right.
Well, yeah. Jeffrey Combs is everywhere.
He is everywhere.
As for the Klingons, you know, I wanted the way I saw it, I wanted the Klingons to be really scary. I mean, I wanted them to be scary for our crew and for the audience. I wanted to see Klingons in a way we hadn't seen them before. A lot more savage and a lot more, maybe a little more berserker when they get mad. Not, you know, I mean, unfortunately in Next Generation and in those other shows, Klingons were used as a signpost for how bad the other guy was. You know what I mean? If you could beat up a Klingon, you were really bad. And so Worf got beat up a lot. And I always, you know, whatever, it is what it is. You have to kind of make those sacrifices. But it was funny in this episode. So the original script idea was that was what was filmed. It's the Klingon goes into the holodeck and he says, "I can see my house from here," and they're in this kind of Klingon valley. But before that happened, it was a weekend before the script was locked. Rick said to me, "I know you have some ideas about the Klingons. Why don't you take the weekend and write up how you would do this holodeck scene?" And I said, "Okay, great." And, you know, I'm not expecting that it was going to be used. Rick was a guy who, once he set his mind to something, that was kind of how you moved forward. And in television, you kind of have to do that. But I appreciated the opportunity. And so I went home and I thought about it for a little while. And so my take on it was, when I gave it to him, was, so this Klingon captain hands this alien this chip and he puts it in the wall and the door opens and this Klingon captain walks in, and just as we're about to follow him, another Klingon puts his hand up and kind of shoves us back and the door closes, and so it's just this captain in there. And we're outside. We're with Archer and Trip, and all you hear is screaming, just agonizing screaming. And the door opens and the Klingon captain, as he's walking towards us, an alien falls over dead, and you realize that behind him there are all these different kinds of aliens, and they're all dead. And he walks out with his knife, and he rubs it on his leg, and the door wipes the blood off his, you know, blade, puts it away, the door closes, and he says to the aliens, "We'll take it." And, you know, as far as the technology goes. And... you know, they filmed it the way they wanted to. The episode was lighter. They wanted to highlight more of the wonder of the holodeck and less of the kind of meanness of the Klingons. But I thought that would have been fun to really see the fear on Trip and Archer's face when this one guy walks into this room and walks out and five other aliens are dead. And you know, that's what they take for enjoyment, you know.
I liked that Archer does not know how to talk to Klingons in this episode. He has no clue what to do. And that it takes T'Pol saving his ass in front of the Klingons to get them to cooperate. And I really do like, and Dave, I like your idea and I think it would have been awesome, but I at least like at the very end of the episode that the Klingons are not happy that this has happened in the first place, and they don't want to have anything to do with us. In fact, they'd rather have destroyed the Enterprise than have done anything with them. And I like that you leave this episode. I mean, it's a fun episode till you get to that point and you realize this is not going to be happy the next time that Klingons and humans
meet. You
don't
necessarily want to meet these guys again.
No, exactly. And I think that at least, I'm glad they at least kept some of that idea that you were trying to put in there, because I do think these Klingons scare me more than, you know, what I'm used to on, say, Deep Space Nine or Voyager or whatever.
Well, if they had gone with your idea, Dave, then definitely we wouldn't want to meet these guys again, right?
Yeah, and that's what I found kind of compelling about it, is that if you saw a Klingon ship, you would kind of have the same feeling you do when you see a Borg ship approaching. I mean, you as a viewer, when you see that ship approaching, you feel dread. You feel like some bad shit is going to happen right now. You know, it's like, you know, for a comic book fan, it's when Darkseid or Thanos shows up. You know, you just go, oh, no, this is going to be bad. And I just wanted that kind of visceral feeling for people about Klingons again, because I never felt they were given the, you know, the strength that they needed to have. Now, in DS9, they do a lot of really cool stuff with the Klingons.
Right.
But, I mean, we still established that, and they still did it. And, again, it goes back to my Dr. Death syndrome, you know. More danger!
T'Pol does have her line here where she says, that is a Klingon battlecruiser. You can tell that the Vulcans don't want to encounter Klingon cruisers in space.
They know it.
Yeah, I mean, look, they didn't want to do it from the pilot episode. They were like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
This is not good.
Another thing that I liked about this episode is that T'Pol saves the day using continuity, using the power of continuity, because I'm a big fan of referencing things that came before. And, you know, Voyager was so set apart, like each episode stands alone. And sometimes they'll mention something that happens before. And, you know, TOS doesn't remember what happened the week before at all.
True.
Yeah. That was a different time.
But I really liked, that was like my first hint that Enterprise is going to be different. It, like after Minefield and the ship was still damaged in the next episode. I was like, what? But this is my first clue that things might actually get to be continuity, which I really appreciated. I was like, she kind of pulled it out there.
Yeah, it's really a showcase for a lot of the characters in that show, and so early on as well. It's a really fun, well put together show.
While we're talking about technologies here, at any rate, we talked about the holograms. We see two other technologies for the first time here. One of them's replicator technology, where he says they apparently have the ability to, you know, resequence proteins and make, but they're not very good at making water apparently, because it's like a clear jello. It's like
right,
that you can feed your partner centrally. Yeah,
yeah. It's, I noticed, it's like that. Yeah, Sprite jello.
It was jello shooters, is what it was.
Jello shooters. That's right.
She can give me as many of them as she wants.
But then, so she says, this is as close as we could come to water. Then they're in a boat on water. Or are they in a boat on jello? I don't know what they're on, but it seems like, so on this world, they have water and they have boats, but yet they can't actually make water.
Not to mention the eels or whatever they were swimming through, that they walked by.
That certainly looked like water.
Yeah, there we go. That's the problem. With the holodeck, I was going to say, well, maybe it's not as interactive as modern.
Yeah, it's a difference between holographic technology and the ability to replicate actual things.
Yeah, and that would make sense, except for the fact that she picks up the dirt and she's just like, look, it's dirt. We made dirt.
I did get the feeling that even though it kind of felt like dirt, the whole environment doesn't look, and I'm sure it's just the CGI work, but it just doesn't look as polished as you would think it should for, you know, a real holodeck. And so when they get on the boat, it doesn't really look like great replicated water. It looks like a strange kind of facsimile.
They were actually floating on Founders.
There you go. Exactly.
It was the Great Link.
It explains so much.
Yeah. It's not really holodeck technology. It's just all the Founders linked together.
Shape-shifting into what you want.
But I will say, like, the entire environment, including the aliens' skin, their uniforms, everything about that environment, it felt kind of like if you ran the world through the plastic wrap filter on Photoshop. And so I can see where, I mean, creatively, you could think of it as it maybe is an attempt to show that this is how Trip is seeing the environment through human eyes after he has partially acclimated to it, but not fully. And the environment really is very, very alien. And this is just his perception of it.
Done.
Done.
I like it.
The other technology here, while we're talking about technology, is cloaking technology, where T'Pol says they seem to have some sort of stealth technology in it. Even though they have encountered Klingons, and the Vulcans have certainly encountered Klingons before, even T'Pol seems kind of surprised by a technology that could actually hide a ship, which kind of implies that the Klingons at this point in time don't have cloaking technology either.
No, the Klingons don't get it till the middle of TOS.
After they get from the Romulans.
The Klingons won't get it until they deal with the Romulans.
Yeah. So that would mean that the Vulcans have no experience with the Romulans at this point. I'm just trying to... I'm looking at, like, what... If I go backwards from this, from the comments that are made on Enterprise, what can I extrapolate about the various races in the Star Trek universe?
Well, it's a... You know, there's a lot of stepping on toes when it comes to continuity when you're doing this. I mean, certainly... Now, I don't remember exactly how we got out of the Romulan episodes with the cloaking device and didn't stab Spock in the chest when he realizes that, you know, the Romulans look like Vulcans and they have this cloaking technology.
Right.
But they how did we get out of that?
I think y'all got out of it because
we never knew what the ship was.
Right. Yeah. You don't know
who
the ship is.
You never say the word Romulan.
Right. And the cloak doesn't work all the time. Like, it keeps phasing in and out. So it's like they come across a Romulan ship that is, you know, practicing with the cloak, and the cloak is not working the way they need to. But we never learn that it's a Romulan ship. We know it because of what it looks like as the viewer, if you've seen all the other stuff. But, you know, if you're just watching Enterprise for the first time and that's it, you wouldn't know who these people were.
You would think that after a few hundred years that Spock would have seen every episode of Star Trek, though. I mean, he's had enough time.
Spock doesn't watch a lot of TV. Amanda did not allow TV in the house, and, you know.
He just watched Firefly over and over.
Yeah.
He did get to see Romulans, but he didn't believe it because it was in some kind of... He got like a cross beam from some kind of alternate universe where, like, he was really old for some reason, but he was also young. He was very confused. He just turned it off.
Let's talk about the Vulcans there.
Well, let's talk about Trip's pregnancy a little bit because that, of course, is... the result of his actions in this episode.
It's impressive that it's taken this long for us to actually
I have a question, Dave, because you were there behind the scenes. Now, is it true that the original title for this episode was going to be Wrist Nipple?
Yes.
That's probably just the name of the show.
That's titillating.
Oh, man.
I have to say, I was rather impressed by Phlox that he knew that was a nipple like that quick.
And the delivery of the line by John Billingsley is that is a nipple.
Just like every single line that he delivers. Well, it's incredible.
But I mean, come on. He scanned it with the tricorder. It would have told him what it was doing. I mean, it's not like Phlox is a complete genius. He has some technology.
I want to see the tricorder readout for that. Yeah. It's a nipple.
Yeah.
It's nipple. Just a nipple. With an arrow. A flashing arrow.
That would have been great. I love Connor's performance, though. In this episode, both his shock at finding out that he's pregnant, and then what? Of course, it's exaggerated a bit as he goes. You know, the mood swings and the wanting to eat everything he can get his hands on.
Exaggerated. That's just a man being pregnant. That's why women are the ones who get pregnant. I mean, come on.
Right.
I've known a few pregnant women. My sister's one of them, and they get weird cravings. My friend who's pregnant made her husband go out and get her a hot dog because she had to have a hot dog because the movie they were watching, they were eating hot dogs, and she needed it then. So it's not like it's crazy.
So this is like true.
I've done that, and we're not pregnant.
My wife hates fast food. Hates, and McDonald's is right at the top of the list of things that she hates. And while she was pregnant, we had to go get a McDonald's cheeseburger, and she sat in the car and ate it while she was crying. She ate every bite, and she was like, I hate myself. This is so good. it's a bizarre time.
Huh. Awesome.
Eddie pulls it off very well here.
But when he's in the mess hall with Phlox and Archer and they're eating the, you know, the chicken tetrazzini.
Yeah.
And he asked the guy, he's like, can I get some more of this? Yeah. This is really good.
He's like, I'd love some more of this.
Yeah. And his mouth is still full of food while right. he's saying it. And then of course they're having the argument still about all that's going on. And the guy, he doesn't realize, has been standing there with the food. And he's been hearing like half of this conversation, and Connor just kind of rips it through his hands.
And he wonders how everybody knows.
The guy walks in as Phlox is saying, you may just both be putting this nipples to work before you know it. And the crew member's face, I mean, if you just watch his expression, he's just like shock and terror.
Oh, gosh. It's
and Archer
so
talking about like, well, you don't have to wear your uniform. Because it'll, you know, wearing your regular clothes will help hide the bulge.
And I like when he
like
comes
that's
in.
That's not weird.
When he comes in with that shirt on, and I know we've seen Tripp in the civilian clothes in the past, but in this case, when he comes in with that shirt on, I really feel like he's trying to wear this baggy shirt to hide.
It's his man muumuu.
It's his man muumuu.
It's a man muumuu.
Tripp's man muumuu.
Maternity.
Maternity clothes.
Yeah, Maternity for Men by Tripp.
It's magical.
Oh, gosh.
You know what I like about also about that episode that was fun that just jumped into my head? This is the episode where the gravity goes off in the shower.
Right.
Yes.
The scene with Archer. I love that scene. I think that's really fun, too.
That was
Mariel's been waiting
scene.
To talk about this.
I have a reason. It's not... Okay, yeah, it is kind of... No, I just thought it was interesting to see how, you know, minor problems can make mundane activities in space, you know, a little troublesome. That's
and
all.
You liked seeing Archer naked.
I'm sorry. I don't think Tripp is magical, okay? We differ on this opinion, Matt.
Mariel and I talked about this last week on Colin's show about the privacy screens on these showers and how they always seem to cover up just the naughty bits. And Archer's seems to like move up as he moves up, like it knows that there's a camera watching.
It wraps around.
Of course it does.
It's that smart, you know, everything's becoming smart. We have smartphones. We're going to have smartwatches. This is the smart privacy screen. It moves with you.
We really don't need that.
It just make sure.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're very prudish. Yeah. So. No, I actually think that that's a fantastic scene. One, because it looks good. I mean, the water and everything. Everything they do there. And it's a great way to open up a show, and it definitely lives up to their promise that this is going to be a sexier Trek, because the ladies, they got their Archer fix.
Yes, we did.
I like that that's the teaser.
Yeah.
I like how that's the teaser. That's the entirety of the teaser is gravity goes off, gravity comes back on.
But it is cool.
It's like, Enterprise. I'm like, wait, what? That was it.
Drew's like, what just happened here?
Something that's inherently fun about this and the entire series is that I think as we went on, everyone we met was more advanced than us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just about every alien was more advanced than us. Our stuff was like, you know... you know, damn the torpedoes, and you know, we had showers going out, and the shuttles were dropped on this big giant umbilical cord that kind of went down through the, you know, bombardier doors, and in that respect, I think it's really fun that we're out there on this ship that's so ready and not ready at the same time.
Yes, I love that. I love that the Enterprise is not, it's not perfect. And a lot of time it's them dealing with just problems, not even problems that are happening from outside influences, but just because the ship is untested.
Yeah, I mean, I things like deflector shields, and I mean, especially phasers. Man, the first time they test the phasers and they blow up that range, mountain range, or whatever it was. I mean, I love the idea of showcasing something like phasers to say, this is why this is the chosen weapon of these people for the next couple of hundred years. I mean, because when they fired those phasers, it was pretty wicked.
Yeah, that was really awesome. And I think that, I mean, this is a show that I think a lot of fans, when they first saw it the first time in the first run, they were just like, what? What is this? Why is this on my screen? I don't get this. Because they didn't really get the idea of what we've been talking about this whole time. The Enterprise is supposed to be something new. These people haven't ever been in space. You've seen 700 hours of Star Trek. These people don't know that stuff exists yet. You need to forget all that and live as if you were the one walking into space for the first time. And I love that Enterprise lets me do that. And I love every single season of Enterprise. I don't care which one it is. There's some clunkers just the way there is in every single show. But this show, more often than not, gets it right. And, you know, from, you know, hearing Brandon and Rick talk on the Blu-rays recently, you know, if they had gotten to do what I think what they really wanted to, this show would have just been insanely awesome. And, you know, the studio just wanted, you know, normal Trek, and they had to fight to get this to not be normal Trek.
Yeah, and this was really the first series. The studio had gone through a complete turnover of hierarchy, and this was the very first Star Trek show of the four series that we all did that there was involvement from the studio and the network. I guess it started to happen towards the end of Voyager, but Next Gen, DS9, and the bulk of Voyager, it was a very unique situation in that we were able to do set the course for the show the way we wanted with little to no involvement at all. And that was a big change when Enterprise came around, because then suddenly we were getting notes from UPN. I remember one of the notes was, hey, do you know that place where they all eat?
Right. I know this story.
Yeah. The mess hall. What if every week or once every three or four episodes, there was a new band playing music in there?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Sorry.
Where would they have come from?
Exactly.
It's like, oh, we've got Newfound Glory in the back. They're just always behind the camera. You can't see them.
We know bands can get on the ship.
Yeah, right, exactly. Those are marketing notes, but it's like, you know, you should understand the concept of the show. Look, I understand you're trying. The new trend is get live music, and then that live music can be sold, and, you know, it's a whole tie-in. We get it. But this is not the show for that. This is not the show where that should happen.
Can you just have Archer and T'Pol perform every week? You know, maybe you can have them do some Billy Joel one week. And no, this isn't Glee, damn it.
Yeah, it's I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are notes that come from networks and studios that make sense and are quite logical and fun and actually can help a show. We were not getting a lot of that.
Right. I've heard this story before, Dave, and I believe I was told Brandon's response to them was like, have you seen the show? It takes place
exactly in
the future on a spaceship. Like, where the band's going to come from, like Drew said.
Yeah, it's interesting how, you know, in some cases that it's a case of the tail wagging the dog, and it's, you know, Rick fought and fought and fought to make this as much of what he wanted it to be as he could. I mean, there before the show started, I had a meeting with the heads of licensing, who are no longer here, but we had lunch, and it was right when word had slipped out that we were going to do a prequel. And they said to me, would you talk to Rick about not making it a prequel? Because what we want to do is have new uniforms that don't spin. Now, when they heard prequel, they were thinking back to Captain Kirk's time. So they were like, you know, we'd love to put new toys out that are new ships into the future, and new uniforms and new guns. And I said, wait a minute. You want me to go to the executive producer of this television series that hasn't even been born yet and tell him to please make it a story that's in the future so you can sell more toys? And to them, it was completely logical. It made perfect sense. Well, yeah. You know, and it's like, well, guys, you might as well just carry my head home with you now. Are you insane? But in a lot of ways, that's how these things work. Unfortunately, we were immune to a lot of that stuff. But it took Rick going to the mat a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I know that now, you know, a lot of people who initially kind of balked at this series have rewatched it and they're liking it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know when it was, maybe a month and a half ago or 2 months ago or something, I got an email from a friend of mine who works at CBS, and he said, you're not going to believe it, Rick just joined Twitter. And his first tweet was something like, here I am, come and get me, I can take it. And I said, well, geez, I got to join up Twitter now. You know, I was certain that there was just going to be this assault on him. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to sign up too, and just for a little moral support for when people start lashing out at him. And there's none of that. People are you know, telling him, boy, I'm rewatching Enterprise and I really like it. It's a lot better than I remember it being the first time around. And I don't know what the effect is that happened for people to have that turnaround. I don't know if it's because they're they have a different view of what the bad robot guys are doing, or if it's just that it took time for them to kind of appreciate the show. I don't know, but it's nice to see it.
I think it's time. I think that following Voyager, fans wanted a continuation of the 24th century, and they got this instead, and it wasn't what they wanted, and so they just tuned it out. And now that enough time has passed and people are wanting new Star Trek again, they're saying, well, we're not getting a new series, so I'm going to go back and watch the series that I blew off originally. And now that enough time has passed that they don't have that feeling of wanting the continuation of Voyager anymore, they're watching it for what it is, and they're seeing that right. It has good character-driven stories, it has continuity, and it does make an effort to recapture the sense of wonder and exploration from the original series, as well as try to fill in a lot of the gaps in Star Trek history, and they're finding that it actually is a good show.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really difficult to... just like with any other show that has any kind of fan following like this does, the fans are diverse in their views of what things should be. I mean, even the discussions we've had tonight between ourselves joking around, they're not joked, about which series we like or what we started with, and the kind of ribbing each other. That gets accentuated a lot online, and there are people who, you know, I hate DS9, I hate yours, and I, you know, and it becomes this kind of, you can get that very easily from the fan base. Mm-hmm. So it's very nice to see this turnaround. I know there are guys, there are people that are purists. I am a diehard original series fan. Next Generation has a very special place in my heart because of the first show I ever worked on, and it happened to be Star Trek. But the original series is always going to be that thing that captured my imagination as a child. That doesn't mean that you have to disparage what comes after it. You can take joy in all of these things. Find what you like about it. Now, if you can't do that because it's not Jean-Luc Picard or Captain Kirk or Ben Sisko or whatever your thing is, then to me, you're not really a fan. You're a fan of that series, but you're not a Star Trek fan.
You're a fan of that series.
I feel the same way about Star Wars. If you're not a fan of it all, then you're not a fan at all.
See, that's actually a discussion I've been wanting to have. This may not be the place for it, but definitely the Star Wars, Star Trek, how you cannot like some parts of the series and still be a Trekkie, but if you don't like some Star Wars, you're not a Star Wars fan. That's something Matt and I can do on the side.
Yeah. We'll talk about that on the other side of the room.
Yeah.
I think what we'll do is we'll stick a knife in the floor, and then we'll tie your wrists together at one end of the room, and we'll do a little Captain Kirk, Captain Tracy action, and see you guys go at it.
Or we could just have like an Andorian fight scene. We get locked, and we have those great ice cleavers, and
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
Well, you guys should get a bunch of diehard Star Wars fans on here, and you should, have that Star Trek Star Wars conversation.
We should, yeah. All right. Well, we've been talking about Unexpected for a bit over an hour, so why don't we wrap up our discussion with our final thoughts and our ratings. And Drew, why don't you kick us off with your final thoughts on Unexpected?
Well, like I said at the beginning, I'm torn on it. I actually started numbering the positives versus the negatives, what I liked and what I didn't like from the episode. And even if the what I didn't like numerically outweighed what I did like, the quality of what I did like outweighed what I didn't.
Sounds like a very, very Vulcan analysis of this episode, Drew.
Well, I'm just trying to go with quality over quantity. And I do like the episode. I like it more now that we've talked about it. Usually, like we usually do, once I've discussed it, I feel better about said episode. And I think that I'm going to give it a 4 hands in weird pebbles.
Excellent.
That's like in vitro fertilization. Be careful.
Yeah.
You'll be octodad.
How about you, Mariel?
On the surface, I think it's a very interesting and funny episode. It's, funny to see Trip be pregnant. He's a guy, obviously. That's out of our, worldview. One thing we didn't really talk about, though, was kind of how it represents gender issues. If he had been a woman, what would they have treated it as important to go find the Zerillians and make them take the baby? So, that was kind of in my head as I watched it. I think I would probably end up giving it 5 cubes of water out of 10.
Excellent. And Matthew?
I got to pick the episode this week, and this is actually one of my favorite Enterprise episodes. It's just such a good time. It is so much fun, and for all the reasons, though, that we talked about, we're discovering a really alien race. I don't just get to beam over to their place, and I can automatically, breathe their air. Everything's fine. You get over to their ship, and like Dave talked about, when he was on set, it looks freaky. It doesn't look natural at all. They got grass growing on the walls. Are they potheads? What's going on here? And then the aliens themselves are very kind of strange. And then, of course, you stick your hands in some pebbles and you turn out pregnant. This is what sci-fi should do. And I appreciate that Enterprise went the extra step. And honestly, too, this episode, every time I watch it, I feel like it's a TOS episode. kind of the look and the feel of the Zerillians looks very TOS-ish. When you get inside their ship, it has this weird 60s sensibility to it as well, which I really like. Drew talked about you walk into the holodeck and you get those, you know, it looks like those holo stickers all over the wall. It just looks like a 60s set. So I really felt that TOS feel. I felt like they were just giving some love to something we don't see very often. And so I really, really like this episode. And for me, oh gosh, rating wise, I think I'm going to have to go with 12 extra nipples.
Wow, that is a high rating.
That is a superfluous amount of nipples.
And how about you, Dave?
I think that coming out of the to have this episode coming out of the gate, I think it really illustrated what the show is going for. It sums it up in a lot of different ways, and that's, I mean, it's what everybody's talking about here. It's that sense of exploration, that sense of the different, that sense of things that are terrifying and awe-inspiring that we will no doubt run into when we're out there. And it also, I think, has some really charming performances, some of the best in the entire run of the show. And I think it endears a lot of those characters to us right from the get-go. So I think that it's a really powerful, fun episode in that way. I give it 10 Superman symbols.
Wow.
Great. Well, I think you guys have said pretty much everything. I agree. It does a very good job of capturing the spirit of Enterprise and what the show could be as a prequel. As with some of the episodes just before this one with Strange New World and Fight or Flight, it captures that kind of sense of wonder of the unknown that's out there. And as the title suggests, the unexpected. There's just all kinds of cool stuff here, food growing on the walls. And it's a very interesting episode. And I like getting those glimpses of the technologies. The hollow closet, I call it in this episode because it's so small. And the replicators, cloaking technology mentioned. Connor Trinneer's performance is just so wonderful in this episode. So I give this one 8 plates of chicken tetrazzini.
Nice.
Now I'm hungry.
All right.
Something you want to tell us, man?
Well, I was on a ship and played a game.
It's an awfully baggy shirt you got on there today, Matthew.
I was hoping you wouldn't notice.
All right. Well, before we go, Mariel, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
I am the news editor for Trek FM. You can find me writing the news as it comes out, little tidbits every day, so check back. And you can also find me on Twitter, A Florida Girl, all separated by underscores.
Excellent. How about you, Drew? Landrew. I haven't been calling you Landrew recently, have I?
I know. It's actually, I've actually missed it. You cannot find me as Landrew on Twitter, but you can find me on as at 005 on Twitter, all spelled out without an H, where I tweet stupid jokes and sometimes stupid jokes based on reality and sometimes stuff I make up. And I mean, that's what Twitter's for, right? And to ask celebrities questions.
Yeah,
absolutely. And of course, people can find some of your writing on Trek FM as our TOS editor.
Yes.
And Dave, where can people find you now that you have joined Twitter?
You can find me at, let's see, it's at It Means Hope. But the I in it is actually a small L.
Interesting.
I know that's confusing. It's because it means hope is already taken by some other bastard.
I love the Superman reference.
I was looking for you on Twitter earlier today, and I was like, I wonder if this is him. This guy with the Superman icon.
So you're actually Lit Means Hope, right?
Yes, Lit Means Hope.
Lit Means
Lieutenant.
Hope.
Lieutenant Means Hope.
Lieutenant Means
Hope. S Hope.
That's who you are.
Lieutenant Mean S Hope. That's your name.
I'm Lieutenant Means Hope.
So in that episode when Picard said, Lieutenant Hope, please come to the bridge, it was Lieutenant Means Hope.
They called her Hope for short.
It's a hyphenated last name. It's fine.
This all makes so much sense now.
Good luck finding me after this.
And Dave, do you have anything that you're working on right now that you would like to tell the listeners about?
Well, we continue to work on Doug and Doug Mirabello and Jose Munoz, and I continue to kind of crank out scripts for our show that never was, Final Frontier, an animated Star Trek show, and you can find that at StarTrekFF.com, and there's the overview and history of the entire project. There are scripts there, there are storyboards, there are gallery designs of things that never were. So enjoy.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. And for the listeners, if you want to hear all about this Final Frontier series, if you go all the way back to the Ready Room 6, the way like 2 years ago, Dave is there along with Doug and Jose, and we have an entire feature discussion about the whole history of this series and how it came about and where it's going. So you can find that in iTunes or on our site as well.
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us, Dave, Andrew,
yes,
and
thanks
Ariel.
Thanks for coming. It was an honor.
Yeah. Great to have you on. Well, Chris, that was so much fun getting a talk about Unexpected. You know, as I said, it's one of my favorite episodes. I really, really enjoy Enterprise. I enjoy the character of Trip Tucker. I like watching his progression through the series as a character and getting to grow and where he gets to go and just how much he kind of grows up during the series and how much all the characters really kind of grow up during the series and change. And so for me, getting to talk about this, especially with Dave, was just fantastic.
Yeah, I'm really glad Dave could join us because I love to hear the behind the scenes process of creating the episode and, you know, those stories that you may not get to hear otherwise unless you just are able to talk to someone like Dave who has the firsthand experience. So it was really interesting, and there was a lot of stuff in this episode. You know, we talked about a lot of the different technologies. We talked about the Klingons. We talked about the exploration. We even talked about the Vulcans, how they're portrayed on Enterprise, which is really not that much related to this episode other than T'Pol's attitude towards Trip, which was really quite amusing. A lot of stuff in here. You know, I guess my one regret about the show today is that we didn't really spend enough time talking about growing food on the walls, because if I could grow food on the walls in my studio here, it would be awesome. I mean, first of all, I would have Arby's roast beef sandwiches growing on the walls.
Man, I know how you like your big beef and cheddar there, Chris, and how they don't have those in Japan. And
we don't have it here.
I feel bad for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not getting Star Trek Into Darkness until August 23rd, that sucks, but not having Arby's, that really sucks.
Oh, Chris, I'm sorry. Goodness. Well, hopefully, you know, Japan will open up its mind to the idea of a roast beef sandwich smothered in, you know, melted Velveeta-type cheese with a nice soft drink and curly fries.
Maybe so. We can only hope. At least give me the Arby's barbecue sauce. I really need that. But until that happens, let's tell everyone how to contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on Unexpected, on Enterprise, on anything we talked about during news, on their favorite Star Trek-inspired fragrance. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to us by email. You can join us in our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for the Ready Room. There's one for Enterprise. You can join in discussions with us and other listeners. Talk about anything you like. You'll also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And of course on Twitter under username TrekFM. Now, Matthew, if people want to find you personally, where should they go?
Well, Chris, me personally, we are all on Twitter at MattRushing02. Also, I do the book reviews here on TrekFM. So if you enjoy the literary universe, you can check out the book reviews for the newest books in Star Trek here on TrekFM, as well as doing the Orb, where we talk all things Deep Space Nine, Chris, you and I's first love when it comes to Star Trek. If you don't like Deep Space Nine,
and you just need to be talked into it by the dulcet tones of Chris and Matt, we'd really like you to join us on the Orb. We gaze into the Orb every week, and brand new and amazing things come out. And then lastly, we do literary treks where we talk with books and the comics, and it's such a blast to be able to do that, and really give some love to a part of Star Trek fandom that really hasn't gotten much of it.
Yeah, it really is, and we have a great time talking to the authors on that show as well. We've had not all, but a vast majority of the key authors in the literary universe on the show so far for some fantastic hour-long interviews, and so go check that out. You can find The Orb and Literary Treks both in iTunes. You can stream them from the site, or you can go over to our podcast directory on Trek FM and find them there. And if you'd like to find me, I am on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me tweeting, of course, about Star Trek, a lot about design, Japan, college football, lots of music. So give me a follow, send me an at reply, and say hello. I'd love to talk to you there. And we'd also like to encourage you to drop by iTunes and leave a rating and a review for the show. If you enjoy The Ready Room, stop by, leave us a star rating, leave us a written review. We love to hear from you, and it does help other listeners find the show. And lastly, Matthew, we'd like to invite everyone to support our sponsor, Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK5 to get 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts of the very best all-in-one platform, the best hosting, the best CMS that you'll find for building a personal website, a blog, a business website, an online store, portfolio, whatever you want to do, you can do it in record time with Squarespace, and it'll be beautiful. Guarantee you, you'll love it. Try it free for 14 days, and then use offer code TREK5 to save 10%. Well, Matthew, I'm really hungry. It's lunchtime, so I'm going to go and see what I can find growing on the walls in the kitchen, and I'm going to bid you farewell.
Well, that sounds great, Chris, but it's time to stick a chicken tetrazzini in it, because the Ready Room is done. I see it's your-